This program is underwritten by the Greater Haines Chamber of Commerce, advocating for a supportive business community.
The following program is a production of KHNS. Its content does not necessarily reflect the views or opinions of the Board of Directors and staff of Lynn Canal Broadcasting Incorporated, the licensee. This is Lynn Canal Voice, a public affairs show from the KHNS newsroom. I'm reporter Abby Collins. Today we're talking about declining king salmon in the Chilkat River. In a few minutes, I'll be joined by Brian Elliott from the Alaska Department of Fish and Game in Haines. But before that discussion, let's take a look at recent and upcoming news in the Upper Lynn Canal. News director Emily Files is here with me, and we're going to chat about what's been going on in local news in the last few weeks. Hi, Emily.
Hey, Abby.
So it's been a busy few weeks for the Haines Borough. Last week, Applications were submitted for petitions to recall half of the assembly. And just yesterday, those petitions were drafted. Emily, you've been following this story. How did we get here and where are we headed?
Right. So it's possible that there's going to be a special election within the next few months to possibly recall assembly members Tom Morfitt, Heather Lundy, and Tresham Gregg. And like you said, this all happened within the past week. The borough clerk's office received three applications for recall petitions. I think it was last Wednesday. And the applications had multiple claims that the sponsors hoped would warrant official recall petitions. So how it works is you have to submit these applications for recall petitions, and then the borough clerk and attorney decide whether those applications rise to the level that they actually could get official recall petitions. So there were a couple allegations that they had in there, and so the borough clerk and attorney decided that there were allegations for each assembly member that did rise to the level of being legally sufficient for petitions. So those petitions have been drawn up and they are in the hands of the sponsors who have already started collecting signatures. There are a couple allegations that made it onto the petitions. One is an alleged violation of the Alaska Open Meetings Act, and that's for all three assembly members. And the other is alleged coercion of a subordinate for personal or financial gain, and that's only for Morfitt and Lundy. And the claim is that their statements on the publication of the police blotter may have been unethical because of their positions with the newspaper and their own blogs. So the next step is for the 10 sponsors who signed the recall applications to take these official petitions and gather 258 signatures on each. Don Turner Jr. is the main sponsor on the applications, and he told me earlier this week that he thinks he will have no problem getting enough signatures. If that does happen, it will go to a special election.
All right, and in other borough assembly-related news...
There's been a lot of that this week,
aside from the assembly meeting that happened this week, actually. Mm-hmm. So last week, the Haines Borough came to a settlement agreement with former manager Bill Seward. Seward was fired by the assembly late last year. And Emily, what is that settlement all about?
So Seward was fired in a 4-2 vote in December by the assembly during a mostly public evaluation. And he was fired with cause, which means that he didn't receive severance pay. So shortly after his termination, he made it clear that he felt he was wrongfully terminated. He got a lawyer and he demanded severance pay. The assembly talked with the borough attorney about Seward's claims in multiple closed-door sessions, and the result of those private conversations came to light late last week with this settlement. So the borough agreed to a $55,000 settlement with Seward, and it releases the municipality from any further legal action. Seward and his lawyer accused the assembly of defamation, racial discrimination, and violation of constitutional rights. According to the borough attorney, Brooks Chandler, the $55,000 settlement is about the same amount that the borough would have had to pay if Seward were fired without cause and got severance pay. Lots of legal jargon to remember here. So the assembly officially approved that settlement at this week's meeting, and Tom Morfitt was the only vote against it. He told me afterwards that the reason he voted against it was because he felt the public was owed more of an explanation, and we're going to have a follow-up story on that pretty soon.
All right, and so in other news, sort of tying back to the assembly, but not quite yet. So I was out at Mosquito Lake last night for the first of two community meetings about policing outside of the town site. And that's a conversation that began at the end of last year when Haynes' blue shirt trooper left and the Alaska State Troopers said they were not sure he would be replaced. And obviously since then we've learned that position will not be filled, which means aside from the Borough Police Department, Haynes only has one wildlife or brown shirt trooper whose main responsibility is to deal with hunting and fishing violations. That blue shirt trooper patrolled and responded to calls outside of the town site, including neighborhoods out Lutac Road, Mud Bay Road, and the Haynes Highway. So since we found out that we were losing our trooper, the Borough Police Department has been assisting in responding to emergency calls outside of the town site. And now the borough is asking what residents living outside of the town site want in the long term. So they held a community meeting last night at the Mosquito Lake School. And it was pretty packed in there. It was probably around 30 people, a little bit more than 30 people turned out. And interim manager Brad Ryan presented several possible options that ranged from cutting off response outside of the town site altogether to expanding the police service area beyond the town site. And those things would, you know, if it was expanded, they would obviously need to find a way to pay for that. There are a couple different ways they could do that through taxes. And that would go to a vote if it was decided that that was the option that people were leaning towards. So it seemed like there was a pretty strong feeling among not everyone, but a lot of people in the room that they don't need an officer patrolling out the highway regularly, that residents want to be able to call 911 in an emergency, but don't feel that they need a regular police presence.
Or they don't want to pay for it.
Or they don't want to pay for it, right. An interesting concern was also raised about the current ability of officers in the borough to respond in a timely manner to emergency calls out the road. There was sort of this, you know, what's the point? It takes an hour to get out here once the call goes in anyway. What are we going to be paying for ultimately? There was a real concern about the cost of this and any increase in taxes.
Because right now the police force is funded for the town site. The town site pays taxes for that, and the out the road residents do pay for that when they come and shop at the grocery store in town or that kind of thing. But technically the police force is only funded for the town site.
But it's paid through a sales tax, so right, everyone's paying when they come and shop here. And like I said, if residents did decide they wanted to expand the police force outside the town site, the borough would need to figure out a way to pay for that. And that would go to a vote. And what they said last night is that everyone outside the town site, inside the town site, would have to agree on that decision.
And there's going to be one other meeting for people to weigh in on that?
Yep, next week, Wednesday, April 19th at 5:30 p.m., there'll be a meeting in the town site at the public library. Which brings us to another police-related story that crossed your radar this week, Emily, at the assembly meeting. When Assemblyman Tom Morfitt made public a handful of critical accounts of Haynes Borough Police. Can you walk us through that story?
Yeah, it was kind of a curveball at the end of Tuesday's assembly meeting. Tom Morfitt publicized these four critical accounts from citizens who've been stopped and questioned by Haynes Police. And he said he was publicizing the accounts because they raise serious questions about police behavior and protocol that borough administration needs to investigate. One of the accounts says the police outed a confidential informant, which the police chief Heath Scott denies. And Scott reacted strongly to Morfitt's unconventional approach to this. He told me yesterday that he thought it was disturbingly inappropriate and that it isn't fair to his officers to have something that should be a private personnel matter judged in the court of public opinion. And Police Sergeant Josh Dryden said he had contacted the union representative about the matter. So what's going to happen now is a little unclear. The assembly voted 5-1 to direct interim manager Brad Ryan to look into the allegations and provide an explanation. But Ryan says he's not sure how to handle this situation yet because these aren't necessarily official complaints and they came to him secondhand through an assembly member. And it's drawn a lot of reactions on our Facebook page. A lot of people have been commenting. Some people feel like the assembly, the borough does need to take a closer look at police behavior. Others feel like Tom Morfitt was out of line with the way that he handled this situation.
Mm-hmm. I want to quickly bring up a few more stories that came up in the last week or so. Another story I covered this week was related to a potential marijuana business in Haines. And this is the first one. Notable, right, because it's the first application for any pot-related business in Haines. And that is an application for a license to operate a cultivation facility on Helms Loop. And if Carol Waldo, the applicant, gets approval from the state, she'll still need to get the okay locally, which will bring up an interesting conversation in Haines, I think, because this isn't something that is addressed in borough code right now. We don't have any additional zoning regulations or taxes. The borough is currently sticking to the standard that the state set.
Mm-hmm.
So residents have until May 11th to submit comments or objections to Waldo's state application, and then we'll see what happens from there. And then the last thing I want to talk about is something that was discussed at the Skagway Assembly meeting last week. Alaska Power and Telephone has decided to stop exploring the possibility of a hydroelectric project at Skagway's West Creek. Basically, the discussion around that was that it's just not viable. They haven't gotten enough interest from the community in favor of it. The municipality doesn't seem that interested in it. So they're not going to get a new permit to continue exploring out there when their current permit expires next month.
That seemed to be met with some positive reaction from residents because it was a bit of a controversial idea to have a hydroelectric power operation in this area that's very popular for recreation.
Right. It does not. I have not heard of any negative, really negative responses to that action
mm-hmm.
yet. So that is about all the time we have for our news rundown. That's KHNS's news director, Emily Files, checking in with us about the week's news. Thanks, Emily.
Thanks, Abby.
And we'll be covering those stories as they develop. You can find the stories we've already done on those topics at khns.org. I'm Abby Collins, and this is Lynn Canal Voice. You're listening to Lynn Canal Voice, a public affairs show from the KHNS news team. I'm Abby Collins, and today we're talking about declining king salmon in the Chilkat River, the science behind the trend, and what it means for local fishermen. If you have a question or comment about the discussion, give us a call at 766-2020 or 983-2853. In the studio with me, I have Brian Elliott. Brian is a Chinook stock assessment biologist at the Alaska Department of Fish and Game here in Haines. He works in the Division of Sport Fish, and he's also a member of the Pacific Salmon Commission. Brian, thanks for being here.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Yeah, very happy to be here, and excited for the discussion.
So you and I have talked a lot in the last few months about king salmon in the Chilkat River, and we have a lot to get through today, but I want to start out by just laying out the numbers. This is not an isolated bad year. We're looking at what you've referred to as about a 10-year downward trend. And if you talk to folks, as I have, who have been around the area for a long time, this trend seems to go back even further than that.
Well, we have had periods of poor escapements before 1991 when we really started our adult stock assessment project, and that is the early 70s, at least for other systems, and the late 80s. So this has happened before. However, starting with 07 through 2016, our escapement estimates are basically half of the previous time period, and that was 1991 to 06. So it is a pretty distinct 10-year period when we are just not seeing the number of spawners in the drainage that meet our goals or that we are used to seeing in the time series.
And last year was the lowest escapement estimate in about 25 years?
Correct. So we started our adult project, like I say, in 1991, and that was the lowest estimate, and that's 1,386 age 5 and older spawners.
And how does that fit into the target range of what ideally you want to see?
Right. Our escapement goal, the lower bound is 1,750 fish. Now, ideally, we have a point goal, which is what we try to achieve every year, and that's 2,200 spawners. So the goal range is around a specific goal. We try to make the lower bound as kind of the worst case scenario, and we missed that by 400 fish last year.
So can you just explain for anyone that's not super familiar with fisheries science and the vocabulary around it, what exactly you're referring to when you talk about escapement?
So escapement are the adult mature fish that have literally escaped through fisheries and other sources of mortality to arrive at their spawning grounds in the Chilcat River drainage. So you can think of it as they've escaped marine predation, they've escaped fishery mortality, they've escaped natural mortality in the marine environment to make it back to spawn.
So it's a very literal term.
Escapement. It really is. And it's, you know, it's used throughout the region, throughout coastwide Chinook management. It's a pretty ubiquitous term.
So looking ahead to this season, this trend is not expected to let up. What's the forecast for this year?
The forecast for in-river abundance is 634 fish, which it's extremely low. And basically the way we create forecasts is from earlier returns from particular age classes. So I'm going to be talking about brood year a lot. Brood year just basically means the offspring from a particular spawning year. So our adults coming back this year are going to be from brood year 2011. So those are the offspring from the spawning population that came to the drainage in 2011 and 2012. So adults come and spawn, they create, you know, they lay their eggs, alevins hatch, smolt leave the drainage, they come back as adults. So those two age classes that are driving this year's return, our previous data shows that they're looking very weak. And so, you know, it'd be nice to say, we're going to be climbing out of the hole this year. Things are looking better. But unfortunately, the data just does not support that.
So you mentioned how you come up with your forecast. I wanted to get a little bit into how you estimate escapement. You have a couple projects that you use at Fish and Game to make those estimates.
Yeah, that's right. Mark Recapture is that's the project that we run. It's run on numerous rivers coastwide in Southeast. That's pretty much our bread and butter. And it's actually very simple. We capture fish in the lower Chilcat River. That's called Event 1. So we use tangle nets in a boat and the Chilcat River fish wheels. We capture returning, migrating adult Chinook. We sample them for age, sex, and length. That's part of that is taking scales. And we also mark these fish externally with what's called a spaghetti tag, which is just a short little plastic barrel that's attached to the fish directly below its dorsal fin. So that's event one. Once that part of the migration is over in the lower Chilcat River, usually about end of July, then we go up to the spawning grounds and we find carcasses and spawned out fish and we check for those marks. And what we determine in the second event, the spawning grounds event, whatever that mark fraction is, that is going to create the abundance estimate for the entire drainage.
So when you talk about these escapement estimates, you're talking about these big mature fish that are coming back. What is so important about these bigger mature fish?
Right, that's a good question. Well, we call them large, large in Chilkat refers to fish that are three ocean or older, so five-year-old, six-year-old fish. That component contains 99% of the spawning females. So that's where your productivity is going to come in a spawning population. If we added in a bunch of two ocean males, that's not really going to give you an accurate depiction of what your spawning population is made up of as far as male-female age composition. So that's why we use that term large. We want to really capture all the females in the spawning population.
And part of the issue here is that the Chinook are returning and they're not coming back as these large fish. There are age classes that are actually disappearing.
Correct. So this is one of the problems that's going on that's driving a lot of the poor escapements in Southeast Alaska is we're just seeing these fish coming back younger, which means they're smaller. And obviously a female Chinook salmon that's 6 years old and measures about 950 millimeters long, that's going to be a more productive spawner than a younger female who has less eggs, smaller, can't dig the same amount of reds in the same places. So there's all sorts of dynamics going on with your age structure. And just for an example, the fish from brood year 2010, which should have been our six-year-olds last year, they pretty much just disappeared as six-year-olds. So we had strong smolt, we had strong one-ocean jacks. Again, they were strong as four-year-olds and five-year-olds, and so we were expecting a pretty nice return from this age class last year as six-year-olds, and they basically just disappeared. So that was about 1,000 adult mature fish that just went missing.
And a big question here is the why of it, which I know there is no one easy answer to, but there are things that you're looking at to try to help explain what is happening. And one of them is marine survival. Can you talk a little bit about what that term means and why it's important in this conversation?
Sure. It's very important. We keep repeating it over and over, but it doesn't make it less true that that is really what's driving these low escapements. And marine survival just basically is a statistic. It measures survival from how many smolt are leaving your river to how many mature to be recruited into fisheries and to return into your spawning population. So it's a ratio. Historically, Chilkat was about 4% marine survival. So, you know, one in every 25 smolt that would leave the river would come back as an adult. In the last few brood years where we have complete data, it's more like 1.5 to 2%. So that's basically cut our survival rates in half. So that just shows you there's less mature fish available for escapement, for fisheries, for all the uses that we have for this resource. What's going on in the marine? That's the hot topic. You know, there's lots of theories. We've had some warm ocean temps that may have rearranged the prey species a little bit for our rearing Chinook in the ocean. Could be increased marine predation. Could be increased competition for resources from all the other stocks that rear in Southeast waters. There's a lot of theories, and that's definitely a major focus of research in the upcoming years.
And then, of course, people are fishing for these fish commercially, sport and subsistence. And we're going to look at specific local management strategies in a few minutes, but on a more broad level, how are you factoring fisheries into this issue? I know you've said in the past, you know, no one's being blamed here. No one specific gear group
Correct.
Is going to be blamed. It's not a blame game. How are you factoring fisheries in?
Well, the good thing about our Cotawar tag program here is that we have a lot of marked Chilkat fish leaving the drainage and going out into these fisheries. So we can identify where catches are going on, by whom, what gear group, and when, and what waters in Southeast. So we have some pretty good temporal data on where the catches are occurring. So this year, for example, that data is really coming into play where research and management are talking pretty closely on what we can do to try to minimize the impact on Chilkats and Taku fish and all of our Southeast wild stocks. So that is being done. And so we're going to, you know, cut back in several areas, several different fisheries to try to minimize our impact on these fish, because Mother Nature is really driving what's going on now, but we can do what we can, you know, what we can to get more fish on the gravels.
And you mentioned you're looking at all Southeast stocks, because this is clearly not an isolated problem in the Chilkat River. How does what is happening here compare to what's happening around the region?
Right, it's definitely a regional effect. So we monitor 11 Chinook systems for escapement, and they've been behaving poorly, especially in the last 5 years. Last year, for example, we had two of the 11 stocks that we monitor actually obtain escapement goals. And that is the Keta River down in Ketchikan area, back beam, and King Salmon River, which is just a short little spawning stream on Admiralty Island with a population of 100 fish or less. So those are the only two out of 11. So the big drivers, Chilkat, Taku, Stikine, Unik, Alsek, all failed to make escapement goals.
All right, Brian Elliott with the Alaska Department of Fish and Game in Haines. We're going to take just a quick break, and when we come back, we'll start digging into how Fish and Game is trying to counteract this trend. I'm Abby Collins, and this is Lynn Canal Voice.